Michigan's Children proudly presents Speaking for Kids, the podcast where we explore crucial conversations impacting the lives of all Michigan children, youth, and families, especially the most vulnerable. Join us each month as we explore public policies and issues in the best interest of our kids and families. We'll bring you lawmakers and policymakers, advocates fighting for change, and the people most affected by those decisions. With our host, Matt Gillard, President and CEO of Michigan's Children, we'll invite you to become engaged too and show you how to take action on what matters most to you. Episodes are recorded live and shared virtually on YouTube and the audio hosting sites Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify.
Hello, I'm Matt Gillard, the President and CEO of Michigan's Children, and welcome to another edition of Speaking for Kids, the podcast brought to you by Michigan's Children. We are taping this episode on June 27th of 2025. Well, I'm very excited to be joined by two special guests today to talk about some issues of importance here in Michigan and that really that around the country, but that we're dealing with here as a society and as a country and that are of political concern to, I know, many of our audience and many of those listening and tuning in. So we're pleased to be joined today by Representative Emily Diefendorf, who's a state representative representing the 77th House District in Michigan, and Emmy Zanotti, who is the Senior Director of Movement Building and Political Affairs at Equality Michigan. Representative Diefendorf, you want to start by introducing yourself?
Sure. So as you said, my name is Emily Diefendorf, and I represent the 77th House District, and that includes much of Lansing and then this giant rural area about a half an hour north up to St. John's and over past the city of Grand Ledge to the west. And this is the beginning of, or actually somewhat into, my second term as a legislator in the Michigan House of Representatives. And prior to this, I had focused my career on LGBT and social justice advocacy and used to be the executive director at Equality Michigan at one time. So Emmy and I understand each other quite well.
Excellent. And Emmy, you want to introduce yourself to our audience as well?
Sure, Matt. Happy to. Emmy Zanotti, pronouns are she, her. I'm the Senior Director of Movement Building and Political Affairs at Equality Michigan. As you said, we are Michigan's statewide LGBTQ education and advocacy organization. And we've been around since, you know, technically, I think tax papers go back to like the 1980s, 1986 or something. And so my team specifically does all of our voter engagement and civic engagement work around the state. And we also do political affairs and legislative advocacy, mostly in Lansing, but you'll also find us defending LGBTQ young people at school board meetings from time to time around the state. So we stay in trouble.
Absolutely. We love good trouble around here, especially at Michigan's Children. So, so just for some context here, maybe for the conversation, then we'll jump into the conversation here. But I think, unfortunately, but not unsurprisingly, LGBT issues, the LGBTQ issues have been thrust right back into the forefront in this current political climate that we've had, that we have now and that we're in. And, you know, at Michigan's Children, we're obviously very concerned about the impact that these conversations or proposed legislation and other things that we see would have on youth and young people in Michigan and really around the country. But we're going to focus on Michigan today. And so we're excited to have these guests and to talk about this very important issue on our podcast today. So Representative, we'll start with you. What are some of the most pressing issues you see today facing LGBTQ youth in Michigan?
So LGBTQ youth are facing still all of the issues that they have faced in the past, in some ways more so in the last few years, and in some ways there is more protection that exists for discrimination against our LGBTQ community and our youth. But especially in this moment, our youth are still battling obstacles to their healthcare, access to affirming and safe spaces, bullying, access to housing. Homelessness in particular disproportionately impacts our community. The isolation that comes from all of those things, violence, and really just being able to be at school and supported in such a way so that they could get access to the same learning environment as everybody else. A lot of these things get in the way of our youth ability to grow up in a healthy environment, but also to have the focus and the support they need to be successful in our schools.
Absolutely. All right, Emmy, how about from Equality Michigan's standpoint, what are some of the most pressing areas that Equality Michigan is focused on, especially in regards to young people?
Yeah, first, I'll just kind of circle back and put an exclamation point on what Representative Diefendorf said. And I think the exclamation point here is that we talk about LGBTQ people generally and young people as well, like there's some sort of like a monolith, right? So what LGBTQ kids need in Detroit might be different than what LGBTQ kids need right now in Bloomfield Hills or Midland or Marquette, right? And so there's a diverse range of needs, and that's because at the core, they're not just LGBTQ, they're kids, right? And so they face issues like housing and economic insecurity, and are they going to get meals, right? Over summer breaks or when they get to school. And those are all issues that are starting to bubble up again, I think, in the discourse that's happening in the legislature, right? With the budget battle now, is what are our state's values going to be for the next year or two? And so they have all the issues that kids have when they're a part of the working class. And then on top of it, they're being bullied by politicians, being bullied by their elected officials, being bullied by influencers who do things like we just saw five conservative influencers fly into Plymouth, Michigan to attack the school, right? So all of these added stressors on top of all of the things impacting the kids wherever they live here in the state of Michigan.
Yes, no, absolutely. And some would even argue being bullied by the U.S. Supreme Court. So let's talk about something that's a kind of current issue, current news that we've seen just recently. So in a recent 6-3 decision, the U.S. Supreme Court held that Tennessee's transgender medical care ban for youth is constitutional, which effectively will restrict access to gender-affirming medical care for thousands of transgender youth in I think 27 states is the number I saw. How could this potentially impact youth in Michigan, and what are the ramifications of this decision on our climate here in Michigan?
Yeah, I'm happy to go first on this one,
sure.
Representative.
Thanks,
so I think it's a great question, Matt. And one thing I do want to clarify is the U.S. Supreme Court has not ruled in sort of a blanket perspective that healthcare bans, trans healthcare bans for young people in these states, constitutional to an unlimited degree or extent, right? I mean, the ruling was pertaining to the argument that was made in this specific case about whether these bans reached, heightened scrutiny. It was about whether this was discrimination on the status of sex, right? But I still think there's opportunities for states, whether it be the Scrimeti situation in Tennessee or other families impacted by these policies, to bring lawsuits into the Supreme Court or into the federal court system going forward. I think there's more barriers to success than there may have been before, but I don't think the window is entirely closed. As it relates to how this could impact the state of Michigan, I think first and foremost, it's important for folks to note, there is no ban on trans healthcare here in the state of Michigan. That means care is still legal, it's still accessible, and we're gonna fight like to keep it affordable, right? And that's really important to note, because I think there's some outlets that are trying to paint this as a decision that takes care offline across the country, and that's not the case. It's still legal and accessible here in the state of Michigan, but we'll still see some really dangerous indirect impacts as the Trump administration continues to tout misinformation about this Supreme Court decision. They'll continue to dial up the pressure on hospital systems and try to use the Department of Justice and the FBI to bully healthcare providers out of supporting families here in our state. And then we'll also see situations like the evening of the Scrimeti decision, when I had a mother call me from Austin, Texas, because now she's trying to relocate her family to Farmington Hills, Michigan, right? And that's the devastating impact, is we have a system that's already overloaded because there weren't enough resources to provide this care to young people in Michigan who need it. And now there'll be more people potentially coming to our state looking for that care. So there's definitely an indirect impact.
Absolutely. Representative Diefendorf, anything to add in particular to the to the recent Supreme Court decision?
Yes, well, I think any court decision can be dangerous and something to watch when it is a precedent that really works against progress. So I do think it's important to continue to emphasize, as Emmy did, that in Michigan, there is no ban on access to care. But when we do see these things happen across the country, and when we see these decisions made that seek to validate separation of our trans kids from other kids, or distinguishing that some kids get access to some resources and other kids do not, we know that there are leaders in our state that are taking cues from that, that are looking for how to build their roadmap for what they would and will do if they get power and the ability to do that. So we need to continue to protect the measures that we have in place in Michigan, because should the political tides shift here in this state, I'm sure that there is a wish list that our more extreme legislators are keeping.
Absolutely. No, I think you're absolutely right, hitting the nail on the head on the political. I mean, we've seen the political winds shift in Michigan, right? And political volatility, I think, you know, here in Michigan. And so this makes obviously our elections even that more important for those of us that care about these issues. Certainly. So one area that has been a focus in kind of a broader context in Michigan, and I think we've made some positive strides on, is mental health supports and services and school safety supports and services with some dedicated and direct funding for those broadly here in Michigan in the last few years. But let's talk specifically about LGBTQ youth, and how does kind of the lack of either family and or school support impact mental health and safety of LGBTQ youth in Michigan? Representative, you want to start?
Sure, I'm happy to start. So first, before we get into this conversation, it's really important to me and to our youth that we recognize that LGBTQ youth are not inherently prone to higher rates of suicide or mental health struggles. This really all comes as a result of stigma, of the way of exclusion, of lack of access to these resources and to safe, inclusive spaces. It's a wearing down of the spirit, and I think we all know some situations like that. When I was focusing on LGBT advocacy, a project emerged, the Family Acceptance Project, that kind of blew us all away at the time. And it was a researcher who came out with the shocking and not so shocking evidence that the one thing that parents can do to support their kids and really just cut down significantly on rates of suicide and mental health struggles is to love and accept their child, regardless of whether they themselves have an understanding of what their child is experiencing or whether they're even at the point of being able to accept it themselves. And that's a game changer, and it's still something our parents need to hear today, that our kids are, our LGBTQ kids are being targeted at school. As Emmy said, they're being bullied by adults. And within the home, they need to be supported and protected and accepted, because when they are not, that's when we see rejection from the household and adding to homelessness. That's when we do see struggle with being able to learn in class and isolation that leads to higher suicide rates. 84% of all LGBTQ youth who were surveyed by the Trevor Project wanted access to mental health care. And that's not because, again, that there are inherent mental health struggles. It's because life is hard. It is hard to be an LGBTQ youth, and the least we can do is to build those safe spaces in all of the areas they are forced to be. Emmy? I don't know if I can hand it over.
No, yeah. That's a stunningly perfect answer to that question, Representative. I think you hit on all the points, right? We know that LGBTQ people are disproportionately represented in the youth homeless population, right? We know that, you know, from the two most recent Trevor Project studies, specifically in the state of Michigan, that we're around 90% of LGBTQ young people who report having their mental health negatively impacted by the things that are coming up in our political discourse about them and their identities, right? We also know that having just one supportive family member significantly improves the likelihood that a young person can live a happy, mentally healthy life here in our state. And so I think all of those things are really important to put into context. And then also the fact that I was really disappointed in the way the media talked about the Scrimeti decision we just referenced. One thing that that continue to see them not kind of connect the dots on is that decision came out where they told families and these kids in 25 states across the country that they could no longer, access this vital, essential, evidence-based healthcare. And then moments later, they made the splash that they were defunding the LGBTQ hotline as it relates to 988 services, right? And I don't know how that's not bullying kids at that point, right? I don't know. It almost seemed like they wanted to add that additional level of mental stress on LGBTQ people in our society when they timed it up that way. And I think that was one of the grossest things I've ever seen in our political discourse. And so we, I think, dreamed in the advocacy space 20, 30 years ago of having parents who loved their LGBTQ kids so much, they would pack up everything to change states to make sure they could get the support and love the care they need. But at the same time, it's so frustrating seeing the government try to make that accepting, loving parenting almost illegal in some instances. It's really disappointing.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's utterly ridiculous. All right. So before, and I want to get into the political kind of climate and maybe some ways that folks can help LGBTQ youth through that or to think more broadly about that. But let's start a little about more digging a little bit more about affirming spaces. So I know we know that we have a lot of educators, counselors, youth service providers across many different areas that our listeners, regular listeners, to our podcasts and tune into our programming. What can they think about? What role can they play, and how should they think about creating affirming spaces for LGBTQ kids, especially in areas where, support is limited? Emmy, why don't
Matt,
we start with you on that?
I mean, it can be the really simple things, right? Like sharing your pronouns when you're meeting young people where they're at, right? Having visual symbols that exist that convey those things, right? Depending on how young people are coming to you or finding out that you exist or where those spaces are, I think in the places where you're marketing that those spaces exist, there's ways to convey that you're supportive of LGBTQ young people. So I think there's a lot of little things you can do like that. But I think the other thing professionals they can do is talk to your peers about how they're providing best in class care for these kids, right? Be a continued learner in the field of making this healthcare accessible to young people and understand that a lot of us in the LGBTQ community, whether we came out when we were kids or adults, have had really negative experiences sometimes in the clinical spaces and the professional spaces. And we're going to be bringing that baggage and that lack of trust with us into conversations. And so I think one of the biggest things is just approaching LGBTQ young people with the grace and patience they deserve to, help meet them where they're at and get them to a place where they can thrive here in our state.
Excellent. Anything to add to that, Representative, before we talk more about the political climate?
Yeah, I would say in addition to that, prioritize learning to speak their language. And I mean, it's one thing that to just learn how to speak to a youth in the first place, but how to speak in a really respectful way. And we do have organizations that can help with that because we acknowledge that we learn more and more what is healing and what can be harmful, and how things land. So there's an organization called GLAAD, GLAAD, that regularly publishes even just a glossary of words and what they mean, what to say and what not to say. And that's not to try to police anybody's language. It's to say we can come into these dialogues from a respectful place that seeks to do no harm in order to make somebody who is seeking services feel safe enough to seek and accept those services. So I would love us to see us learning how to speak each other's languages in all spaces, but especially for youth who are so vulnerable.
Absolutely. All right. And let's attack this issue of the political climate and the challenging political climate to the best that we can. I mean, so one of the things obviously that it's most concerning to me, and I'm sure to a lot of people, I mean, we've talked a lot already in this podcast about this political climate, this challenging political climate, but is the impact that even these discussions or the fact that these issues are out there, it's so front and center, and how concerning that has to be for LGBTQ youth when there's people of authority, right, in our society and in our, in our governments and in elected positions that are so openly willing and eager, it seems like, to attack their rights and their existence in many ways. And so how can we as allies, especially either parents, peers, advocacy groups like Michigan's Children or anybody else that cares about these issues, show up meaningfully for the youth in this current political climate so that they can understand that even though these conversations are happening out there and there may be some idiot elected official saying terrible, awful, gross things or pushing gross ideas, that doesn't have to be the norm, and that shouldn't be what they view, as the majority or that there are people to counter that narrative as well and to protect their interests and that want to protect their interests. So how can we kind of think of that collectively in that regard, Representative? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, as you said, we need to make clear that it frankly isn't the norm, that life is not social media. It would be naive for us to assume that the things we see on social media are not also witnessed by our youth. Our youth are navigating those spaces they're just more adept at technology in the first place, but they're also more present online. So when we see this surge in trolling and online bullying, we should assume that that's not lost on our youth. And that means making sure that if we are in spaces with our youth, we are clear about the fact that those folks do not represent necessarily the views and the acceptance of the allies and the leaders and the authority figures in their own space, leading with love, but also drawing a contrast, modeling the contrast, and encouraging youth taking care of themselves. What is healthy? What is not? As you said earlier, not furthering negative, harmful dialogue when unnecessary, and instead trying to build in some hope. It's not naive or wrong to suggest to youth that there really are folks that care about them and that are going to be with them for the long haul to get us past this moment, because there are. We are those people.
Absolutely. Emmy?
Yeah, I think here the key thing is having the hard conversations in the spaces where young people aren't all the time, right? And that might be with a family member, that might be with a longtime family friend, that might be with a stranger at the grocery store, right? Or it could be with your elected official, your representatives. But I think we've reached a point where I think it's pretty clear coming out of the election in 2024. That, and this is not a trans or LGBTQ plus specific issue. This is an America problem. This is a Michigan problem. This is a democracy problem. We have to find a way to have public disagreement again. And you can't do that on Facebook or in the comments on Instagram or by quote tweeting folks or whatever we call that platform these days, right? I think it's really important to get out there and meet people where they're at and have those conversations. We've been playing around a little bit at Equality Michigan with knocking on voters' doors and just having conversations about trans people, whether they believe they're real, whether they believe they deserve access to healthcare. We had one instance where a trans woman, right, was knocking on a stranger's door having this conversation, and this person started off at like a 3 out of 10, right? Like they're like, I don't think trans people are really that real. By the end of the conversation, 45 minutes, this person was a 10, right? So I think that Michiganders, whether you're progressive, conservative, independent, a swing voter, continue to show they're malleable and open-minded on a lot of issues. And it's just about breaking through that noise and having those conversations. And I think allies contain so much power, specifically right there. If only we can get them to find the courage and the bravery to utilize that. So I really think we need that more from allies right now.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. And it's hard, right? It's not easy. I mean, as somebody who's, I mean, as an advocate for children and youth, and for, the frustration level is easy to get high, to become very high when you think about all of these attacks that and all of the idiocy that we're seeing from elected officials. But I think you're right. We need to commit to the communication. We need to commit to breaking down those barriers and to having the difficult, real conversations. So I want to thank you both. Anything else either of you'd like to add before we wrap this up here? I want to thank you both for being here. But any last thoughts?
I'll just add one thing, and I think the representative touched on this a little bit, a lot, I think, in the last response, but as that just that conversation of hope, right? I think there's a reason, and we just saw the Mahmoud v. Taylor decision come out in the US Supreme Court today, which calls for these sort of broad, acceptable religious opt-outs from folks letting their kids learn about anyone who's different than their religious or the experience that parents want their kids consuming. But I think there's an important conversation to be had here, which is they don't want LGBTQ history to be taught. They don't want LGBTQ themes to be on television or in our public discourse or in our libraries or wherever. And I think there's a really key reason for that. It's because I don't think they want this generation of kids to know who their ancestors were, right? And I'm not talking about our blood ancestors, some of them, right? I'm talking about the LGBTQ folks who have fought for decades for our civil rights here in the US and around the world. And so I think when we think about hope, we should actually look backwards for a little bit of inspiration. We should look forward. All the heroes that did so much, from Marsha and Sylvia at Stonewall to, Bayard Rustin organizing the March on Washington with Dr. King. I think, Harvey Milk, you name it, this community has moved so many mountains that didn't just benefit us. They benefited every single person who lives in this country. We made this country a better place. And kids today are made of the same DNA, the same fabric as those folks. And so it might take a little time for them to look inside themselves or look in the mirror and learn that that lives in them, but I firmly believe it does, and we're going to help them find.
Awesome. Absolutely. And we're committed to help in any way that we can make sure that that happens. Representative Diebendorf, any last thoughts?
I just want us to believe our youth when they tell us who they are. Our youth are incredible, and especially younger generations. It is so freeing to me as somebody who, in the LGBTQ community, at 46, I'm considered an elder. I think I started to be considered an elder at about 30. And it's in part because the younger generations make such incredible progress in understanding and acceptance and community building and saying, hey, this box is not for me. It doesn't even make sense to me. Our youth are leading with a greater understanding than a lot of us have, and that's okay. That's wonderful. That's evolution of how we care and relate to each other. But it is admirable that our youth are so committed to love. They're so committed to authenticity. They're so committed to showing up regardless of what people think and as they are, and finding their people. And that is something we don't want to discourage. It's something we could actually learn from. So I want us to just believe our youth when they tell us this is who we are, when they're on their journeys and they want to share their journeys with us, both because we have to be that safe space, they need to feel comfortable coming to us, and also because they are far advanced than a lot of us are in knowing how to approach this world and each other. And that's commendable. And I can't wait to see what happens when they take on leadership themselves.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank Representative Emily Diefendorf from Michigan's 77th House District and Emmy Zanotti, the Senior Director of Movement Building and Political Affairs at Equality Michigan, for joining me today for this very important conversation around the pressing issues facing LGBTQ plus youth in Michigan today and some of the things that we can think about in trying to support them and continuing to move forward and make Michigan a better and more welcoming place for all people. So thanks for tuning in to Speaking for Kids, a podcast brought to you by Michigan's Children. And please tune in again next month for another edition where we'll be tackling another issue that's of importance to families and kids in Michigan and in our nation. If you want more information about this important topic or other issues, please check us out on the website at michiganschildren.org. Thanks and have a good day.
You've been listening to Speaking for Kids, the podcast for Michigan's Children with host Matt Gillard. Thanks for joining us. To explore these and other issues relevant to our state's children, youth, and families, and to build your advocacy muscle, go to our website at www.michiganschildren.org. You'll find links and news about past and future podcast topics under our Resource tab and action alerts under the Take Action tab. Find and like us on Facebook and Twitter. And Stephen Wallace produced this podcast. Contact them with your questions and ideas for other topics. Michigan's Children is a nonprofit advocacy organization, an independent voice working to reduce disparities in child outcomes from cradle to career through policy change.